Right now it is time, once again, for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us live on a Monday morning, and we talk food. And we're approaching Thanksgiving, and whenever we approach Thanksgiving, I always remember back to the big cranberry scare where cranberries caused cancer. And my grandmother said, to hell with that, and we ate cranberries at Thanksgiving. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was some sort of weird scare. And my grandmother said, you know, she didn't say, well, I can't tell you the exact words she used, but she said, we've been eating cranberries for thousands of years. We're fine.
Well, I am craving cranberries. To be honest, I love tart cranberries. I like almost anything tart. But on TV the other day, I saw someone make, she being rebellious because her grandmother always made cranberry sauce and she never liked it very much. She made a cranberry custard pie. But the problem for me with cranberries is you have to use so much sugar to make them palatable even, that I have to eschew cranberries, at least certainly this year. Maybe I'll have a spoonful. But here's the big dilemma, not cranberry sauce or no cranberry sauce, but really how to celebrate Thanksgiving safely. We here in Brooklyn, meaning Bob Harnett and I, are contemplating what to do. We usually go to my nephew in Philadelphia for Thanksgiving. He has two little girls who were both in school until last Thursday. They started virtual on Friday. They are not happy about that, meaning, well, nobody's happy about that, but particularly the girls themselves. But so they will be home for the next 10 days and safe, and they're negative as of now. But my nephew and his wife are doctors who work in hospitals, and even though everything's been fine so far, there's a huge spike in their area. So who knows what we're going to do. We're going to probably decide at the last minute. But what we did decide was that we were not going to have turkey this year. Finally, I got my way on this. I don't really like turkey. I mean, I like turkey well enough, but to me it's not a celebratory food at all. To me it's diet food. In fact, I know somebody who roasts a turkey weekly, and basically she lives on turkey and salad. And, you know, it's slimming. 1981, Calvin Trillin, the great humorist who still continues to write for The New Yorker, although I haven't seen Calvin a column by Calvin in a while. Calvin's probably an octogenarian at this point. He's older than I am. And in 1981, Calvin wrote a column for The New Yorker about how it might be better if we ate spaghetti alla carbonara on Thanksgiving instead of turkey. It's a famous column. I should have reread it before I got on the air today. It's in my computer somewhere. But I do remember it was 81. And since 1981, I've been thinking, what a great idea that is, as carbonara is one of my favorite foods. Now, as everybody who listens to this program knows, I have been on a carbohydrate-free diet since Labor Day, more or less. And, of course, I do crave pasta. There's so many things that I like to eat that go on pasta. And when I think about it, and I've actually made a few of them and eaten them without the pasta or without the bread to mop up the sauce, and, you know, it's a hardship. So on Thanksgiving, we are likely to celebrate with a high-carb meal. Now, if we celebrate alone in Brooklyn, I already have a two-person dinner planned. But even if we celebrate in Philadelphia, where we will only be the immediate family, my nephew, his wife, Michelle, my niece, and the two little girls, plus my sister, who has been holed up in a senior community that is unbelievably careful, not unbelievably, appropriately careful. So we know my sister is COVID-free. But anyway, that would be the group. So there's probably not so much danger in us driving down to Philadelphia. We won't stop at any at any of the pit stops along the way. They're dangerous. But we did convince my niece, Dr. Michelle, that we would give up turkey this year. I think I may order. Now, you're going to have to help me with this, Marshall, because my memory is gone. What's the name of the smokehouse in Tarrington?
No Dines. I always get? No Dines.
No Dines. Thank you. I'm assuming No Dines is still in business.
Yes, they are.
And I, for years, not for years, but a couple of years when my family came to Connecticut for Thanksgiving, and I was doing all the cooking, I did not cook a turkey, but I would buy a No Dines smoked turkey to put on in the middle of the table as a centerpiece because it's gorgeous. And then we would have turkey to eat the next day as leftover dishes. I mean, it's a lightly smoked bird, so it works extremely well in, you know, turkey tetrazzini. turkey sandwiches with lots of mayonnaise works well on that, too. So that's what I used to do when I was celebrating in Cornwall. So we convinced... Brian convinced Michelle to forgo the turkey this year in favor of ducks. And we'll need one duck for two people. So we're going to be five adults. We'll probably have to make three ducks. And the duck, the way I want to make them is the recipe that is in New York City Food, my book about legendary New York food. And one of the legendary dishes is the roast duck they served at the Four Seasons, the restaurant the Four Seasons, Nevermore. They reopened right before COVID and closed almost immediately. It didn't get good reviews. But anyway, who knows if there'll ever be another Four Seasons, but the duck recipe lives on. And I love the story behind the duck recipe. And by the way, it's a super crispy skinned duck. What we all imagine, but never was, what roast duck should be, used to be, you know, you would get it with in a French restaurant with an orange sauce or a cherry sauce. And in fact, at the Four Seasons, they did serve it with an orange sauce, but I don't have the recipe for that. But the duck was interesting, the duck itself. The Four Seasons was owned by Restaurant Associates in the beginning, but then two people who worked for Restaurant Associates bought the restaurant, Tom Margatai and... How soon we forget. I'm friends with Tom, so I know Tom Margatai. Tom lives in Santa Fe these days, and for a long time now. But anyway... So they bought the restaurant, and they renovated the kitchen, and they hired a Swiss chef named Seppi Rengli, and Seppi walked into the newly renovated kitchen and saw that it had this enormous refrigerated unit, a walk-in, with many, many shelves, and, you know, hence those stainless steel open shelves. And the first thing he thought of was, oh, now I can make Peking duck. And the reason he thought that was he was married to a Chinese woman. And he knew full well how to make Peking duck, one of his favorite things. They never served that at the Four Seasons, and they never called it Peking duck. But the method was the same, which is, and by the way, the recipe is in my New York City food book, which I noticed this morning is a serious discount. I think $18 for this gorgeous picture book. The soft cover is even cheaper. In any case, the recipe's in here. So the reason that Seppi thought of making Peking duck in this refrigerator is because you have to air dry. You still there? I pushed the wrong button.
Yep, we're still here.
Okay, good. You have to air dry the duck. And so I said to Brian, my nephew, I said, if we do this, you have to be able to devote one shelf of the refrigerator, probably one shelf of the refrigerator, not more, maybe a little less, to airing out these ducks. Are you willing to do that? He said, look, I used to brine my turkey. So if I could fit a 20-pound turkey in for to brine, then I can figure out how to do these ducks. So I don't know whether I'm there or not if he's going to make the duck, but one way or the other, I'm eating the duck. So you, after you air dry the duck, you roast it over on a rack over a I guess a roasting pan is what I use with tea. So you know, does the tea flavor the duck? I'm not sure. I'm skeptical. However, it does make your kitchen smell great. The aroma of the tea, and it does, of course, create a lot of steam in your oven. So the aroma of the tea and the aroma of the roasting duck really are almost worth the dish. So I bought, in preparation for doing this again and again and again, I decided to try, well, actually what happened here was I bought this Lapsang Souchong tea, but I didn't really buy it for making the duck. However, we didn't really love the tea. And I thought, well, this is probably a good thing to do with the tea, is use it to roast duck. And maybe it'll give it a little smoky flavor. So I'm waiting to do that. The tea is here. The duck is not here yet. So, and you know, duck goes very well, by the way, with all the usual Thanksgiving side dishes. I would happily serve the duck with sweet potatoes, any kind of sweet potato. Brian wants to introduce his little girls to the sweet potato dish of his youth, which is, of course, whipped sweet potatoes with baked in the oven with marshmallows on top. And as I am not a fan of marshmallows, it's not my dish, but I could see, you know, I like sweet potatoes a lot, and I like them just baked very soft, and you're going to laugh, but after they've cooled down, stick them in the microwave to reheat them, and they come out like candy. You don't have to add any sugar. Just split it open and put some butter on it, and that's all you need for the sweet potato. And, of course, cranberries, whether you like them or not, they do go with duck very well, and a little, some cranberry sauce. If you want to make a cranberry sauce with citrus, the citrus and cranberries go very well together, and citrus and duck go very well together. But, you know, cranberries are pretty tart as it is. What you want is something with duck. We like to eat something fruity and tart, hence the French orange sauce. But that was never so tart. Now, the other thing is, I don't know, in real life, I rarely crave shellfish. But all of a sudden, and I'm going to go out today and buy some, I've been craving shellfish other than shrimp, clams, mussels, oysters. I'm scared of raw oysters these days. I know somebody who got really sick for years, hepatitis, from eating a bad oyster. And he said when he got sick, he said, I knew it was bad as it went down. So I've been avoiding raw oysters. But there is a way of making them cooked that I do love, and it would be perfect for Thanksgiving. You just have to multiply the recipe. The recipe, it's the oyster pan roast from the Grand Central Oyster Bar. Now, I don't know if this is ever going to happen again. Probably will. But underneath Grand Central Terminal, in the beautiful halls, the arched ceiling halls, those ceilings are tiled in what we call Guastavino tile, because Mr. Guastavino figured out how to make tiles that made arches. And they're all over New York City, indoors and outdoors. But under the arches down there is one of the oldest restaurants in New York, the Grand Central Oyster Bar. And they had a counter where you could just stop and stand and have chowder or what they made famous, the oyster pan roast. If you went in fact, by the way, the back cover, I like this place so much, the back cover of New York City Food, if you have a copy, is me sitting at the counter at the Grand Central Oyster Bar, and the chef who's facing me is the chef, oh my God, I know him so well and now his name is slipping. But if you look behind him to the left, you will see some one of the pans. It's a round bottom pan, and you can see it has two handles, and that's what they made these pan roasts in. And oh, by the way, you can also see, as I'm smiling at the camera, behind everything are two people standing at a window. That was the outside window that I described. And by the way, the woman, the young woman with her almost backless shirt on, which certainly gets your eye more quickly than I do, was a plant. We found her in the oyster bar. We said, oh, sit here, you'll make the picture look good. Anyway, the oyster pan roast is one of the simplest things. And actually, on my carb-free diet, I can eat this. The only problem is you really do want to eat this with toast because there's a lot of sauce, more sauce than there is actual oysters. So this is a recipe for one. And as Bob Harned does not eat oysters, if I make this, I'm going to make it just for one. But if you want to make it for two or three or four, you can multiply the ingredients except the butter. The service for one is 2 tablespoons of butter. If you multiply this, do not multiply the butter by the same number. I mean, if you make 4 times the recipe, you don't have to use a whole stick of butter. I would just double the butter. Quadruple the recipe, double the butter. So 2 tablespoons, you just in a nice heavy bottom pan, put 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons or even 1/4 cup, I prefer, of either the juices from the shucked oysters or clam juices. I mean, if you have clam juice, you can actually use bottled clam juice if you really have to. 1/4 cup with the butter, and then you want 8 to 10 oysters or small clams, little stones or cherry stones, a little necks or cherry stones, I should say, shucked. So put the shucked oysters or clams in. This is still a cold pan. And then a generous tablespoon of Heinz chili sauce, 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, and the only ingredient I don't have in the house, a dash of celery salt. I might have to buy some just to make this. I would do that. And 1/2 cup of heavy cream. Put that in the cold pan. Put it over medium-high heat, stirring it constantly. And as soon as the mixture simmers around the edge, that's it. It's done. And that's it. And you pour the mixture into a bowl, and preferably lined with toast points. And you can put a pat of butter on top, more butter, and on each serving. And they always put a little paprika on top. Make sure your paprika is fresh, because otherwise it doesn't have any flavor. It's just the color. Oh, I'm looking in the book, and I see that I actually have pictures of the pan roast being made in these special steam pots that they have at the Oyster Bar. But it's easy enough to make at home. So that may be Thanksgiving dinner. I'm not sure what Mr. Harnett's going to get. If I have an oyster pan roast, I got to come up with something for him.
Yeah, I listened to
and
you.
And then a duck.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm craving, believe it or not, I'm craving popovers. And the reason popovers came to mind is because one of the suggestions I made to my nephew is that we have a rib roast for Thanksgiving. That, to me, is festive food, a standing rib roast. And, of course, with a standing rib roast, you want to have Yorkshire pudding, which, in essence, is a popover. It's a giant popover made with the drippings from the roast instead of with butter or oil. And, there are 2 popover recipes. Maybe there are only one. I don't know. I didn't look it up in the book, but I do know there's at least 1 popover recipe in New York City Food because it was one of the most, iconic foods of my youth. Everybody in those days would go to Patricia Murphy's or Lorraine Murphy's. Lorraine was Patricia's sister, and she at one time worked for Patricia. They had an argument, and Lorraine went off on her own. But in her restaurants, she also served popovers. And to me, this was foreign food, because this was Gentile food. This was the food of Ethiopia. I don't know. I'm not supposed to say wasp, but this was the food of wasps, okay? I mean, you went to Patricia Murphy's or Lorraine Murphy's to eat American food. And this included young women, waitresses, not really, sort of bus girls, dressed in calico dresses with little bonnets, walking around the dining room with baskets full of hot popovers. And they were offered at every table, and what it came with was what they used to call a relish tray, except in this case, to me, foreign food. Watermelon, pickled watermelon rind, apple butter, and cottage cheese. And I remember thinking, who eats cottage cheese for pleasure? You know, to me, certainly as a kid, it was strictly diet food. My mother would eat it with melon when she was on a diet. So remember, you could get a fruit platter at a coffee shop or diner. It was a ball of cottage cheese with fruit.
I remember that.
Was a fruit platter. So anyway, for a diet platter. So that was foreign food to me, and I crave it. And I just looked up my recipe for popovers, and one of the reasons it entices me is because I'm thinking it's a sort of a low-carb bread in the sense that it's more of an egg batter than a bread. And I looked up my recipe, and sure enough, because one cup of flour makes quite a few popovers, and I now know that there are 6 grams of carbohydrate in a tablespoon of flour. So that means that, I don't know, I meant to do the arithmetic. There are, 32 tablespoons per cup, and that's times 6. Well, it's still a significant number of carbohydrates. We're talking about 200 and something. But, you know, divided by all the, it's not that bad.
You know, listening to you talk, I just, whenever I think of Thanksgiving and when I think of Peking duck also, Thanksgiving, I always used to get everybody upset at the table because even though I was always at the kids' table, I would immediately disassemble my plate. I would go get 2 pieces of bread and I would put cranberry sauce, turkey, mashed potato, stuffing on two pieces of bread.
That?
Yeah, and I would eat it because that's the way I am.
Oh,
and my grandmother.
I still don't like that. People make that these days.
I know. My grandmother used to be.
You know, in January they make Thanksgiving sandwiches, but not my thing. I really should have some stuffing if I'm going to be a high carb Thanksgiving to celebrate a rest day for my diet. I think I should add in some stuffing.
Now
I have to figure this out. The pan roast I could eat any day of the week.
When you make Peking duck, do you leave the neck and the stuff on?
No.
Because one of the funniest things in the movie, The Christmas Story, is when the dog eats the turkey and they go out to a Chinese restaurant and they order Peking duck and it comes out and it's got the neck on it. It's all crispy and everything, but it's got the neck on it. And the kids
actually, you know that Peking duck is usually not served whole like that. In a Chinese restaurant, it's the skin, the crisp skin, which is an achievement, is served for its own sake, usually on a bun with scallion and hoisin sauce or something like that, or plum sauce. And then the meat is eaten separately in another dish of the chef's creation. And finally, you get a broth made with the carcass.
Well, I think because this was a movie, they were making it look like a turkey, and so when the kids got all disgusted with seeing that, then the Chinese guy chopped off the neck.
All right. Well, I go to a Chinese roast shop here in Brooklyn, and I do buy roast duck there, and if you want the neck, they'll give it to you. On the other hand, I also order roast duck from my Chinese takeout place because it's on my diet and it's not bad and has no MSG, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, point is, they don't serve a neck either.
Yeah.
But what can I say? You know, if I had a neck, I'd probably make it.
My brother loves Peking duck. He just loves it.
This does have a glaze on it that helps make the skin glossy and even crispier. And it's look at the recipe. But I did this morning. I was thinking, I have a very good version of this Four Seasons duck in my book and certainly in my computer. I wonder if there are any other versions of it out there. So I did a little search, and what did I find? I found my own recipe. So if you do a search on Four Seasons roast duck, you don't have a copy of New York City Food, it's there online.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Arthur.
So anyway, dessert is always up to my niece. Michelle makes two things superbly. Superbly. French toast, scala French toast. Well, I always look forward to eating that there. Although Brian has lately been into chocolate chip pancakes for the girls. And the other thing she makes superbly is apple pie. So if we go, I know I'm going to get a good apple pie. If we don't go, I'm more likely to make coconut custard pie.
Mm. Oh, sounds good.
Yeah, I love coconut custard. And you know what? I may do this. I mean, of course, there's sugar in the coconut custard, but I could make a coconut custard pie without the pastry. Save a few carbs.
Well, my three favorite things to eat other than regular food is apple pie, Boston cream pie, coconut custard, and...
Oh, you said Boston cream pie. Yeah,
and then lemon pie.
No, I forgot about Boston cream pie.
Yeah.
And I've been meaning to make one. I have several recipes that intrigue me. It's all about I must say Boston cream pie. It should be a really good, moist, yellow cake. And by the way, there are recipes out there online, I have noticed, that make it as a layer cake, but I've never seen it as a layer cake. I've only seen it as the top layer, a layer cake, but the top layer being smaller than the bottom layer. And I was always told that that was because it was originally made in a deep dish pie pan. And then you'd cut the top off and put it over the custard. Pour on the chocolate.
Oh, that's the food that made me the man I am today.
Oh, yeah, well, there we go. For me, it was Ebinger's blackout cake.
There you go.
And by the way, that recipe, or something very close to it, is also in New York City Food.
All right.
So if you don't have a copy of the book, remember, listen, I don't make a penny from the sale of these books anymore. Or in this case, if ever. So, but it's on, I noticed this morning, it was on, this is a $40 book when it came out 20 years ago. So, $45. And now it's $17 and change. I might buy some more myself.
All right.
And by the way, it was voted best book of the year by the International Association of Culinary Professionals. I'm very proud of this book. Also, it has a picture of me at the same weight, but younger, which I like, too.
With that being said, we'll speak to you next week, Arthur.
Take care.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio at robinhoodradio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.